Gentlemen, welcome to the Orthodox Union. My name is Chaim Goldberg. I am responsible for most of the OU's fish companies, with some notable exceptions, in addition to other things. But we're going to discuss today some of OU's fish policies. Assuming that as Smicha students, you are familiar with Simon Pei Gimel in the beginning, at least.
You're not
Smicha
students, right? Are you?
Yes,
we are. Okay,
so we'll do a very, very, very quick overview of Hilchos Dagen. Here's how it works. If it's got scales that can be removed without ripping the skin, it's a kosher fish. The Torah talks about you need to check for fins and scales, or a snapper of a kaskeses. The Gemara in Chulin and in Mishnah Nida tells us that's not the case, because practically everything which has a kaskeses will have a snap here. The Gemara says that kaskeses means scales. The Ramban tells us those scales are bemedu marmurim, the kind of scales that can be removed from the side of the fish without ripping the skin. Something that has fins and scales, but its scales are not able to be removed from the fish, are not kosher fins and scales. So please don't give me a call that Encyclopedia Britannica said sharks have scales and why doesn't the OU certify shark? Because, again, scales are not kaskeses. That's that. In addition, those scales obviously cannot be embedded, because I just told you that the Ramban says that in order to be a kaskeses, you have to be able to remove it from the fish without ripping the skin. By definition, if they are embedded under the epidermis, in the dermis, those cannot be removed without ripping through the epidermis, otherwise known as the skin. So, that takes care of at least the ikar din of Hilchos Dagen. In addition to that, let's point out that a fish which has scales at any point during its life cycle is a kosher fish, which means if it has not yet grown scales, meaning kaskeses, or if the scales fell out when it was removed from the water, it is still a kosher fish, which will explain why. If you'll ever treat yourself to a jar of old-fashioned pickled herring, which still has the skin on, and you see a big fat hashgacha on the outside, and then you'll pick up a piece of the fish, and you'll try and search, and you won't find a single scale on it, you won't call me a kaifer, because I'll explain to you what happened was, the scales of a herring fall out when it comes out of the water. Herrings are like that, sardines are like that, tunas are like that, lots of your favorite fish shed their scales on the way out of the water, and actually the cosmetic industry purchases those scales and turns it into, I think it's called Brilliant Sheen, which is an ingredient in lipstick and other kinds of things. So next time your mothers or sisters, daughters, wives, whatever, puts on makeup, you can tell them that something smells a little fishy over here. I'm wondering what new lipstick you're using. And oh, I know, it's Eau de Herring. Yeah, it's actually true. And if you don't believe me, Google it and you'll see yourself. Okay, so unlike other organizations, you're here at the OU, and we're going to talk about what the OU does. The OU does one thing in fish which is different from just about every other major organization, and that is, on occasion, when we feel it's warranted, we will allow a factory to produce fish products whose skin is removed without hashgacha tamidus. Now, for those of you who don't know why I'm making a big deal about once its skin is removed, I'll just tell you that the halacha is, once you remove the skin from a piece of fish, you have now rendered it identityless. That means the fish lost its social security card, driver's license, the whole deal, and doing a credit check won't help you because this thing officially has no identity and it is not kosher no matter what DNA testing you'll do to it afterwards. We will not accept it as a kosher fish. Our Messiah is. Skin is removed. There was no Rava Masher present. There was no Ashkacha system present. We can't know what it is anymore. And so that's the end of it. The OU will allow a factory to produce fish whose skin is removed without Ashkacha Tamidus. Now, how is that not a steer to what I just told you, that once you take the skin off, it's not kosher anymore? The answer is, we rely on a system of lots of different halakhic issues, which I can't really go into too detail right now, but keep in mind that an OU factory has a Mashgiach Yotiv Nichnas, they have their own Mirsas, we are Boidik factories before we certify them to understand their industry and what things could potentially go wrong. We know what there would potentially be machlif in terms of switching one fish for another. And obviously before we're going to certify a factory, we have to make a determination if there's a reasonable concern that they would take a non-kosher similar version of the same thing and swap one for the other. All those things and more factor into when the OU will decide whether a Mashgiach Tamidi is necessary. Yes, we do have factories which we require to have a Mashgiach Tamidis when they don't meet all the conditions that I mentioned and the ones that I didn't, which factor into when the OU can allow a factory to produce without a Mashgiach Tamidis. Obviously, the most famous example of OU product without a Mashgiach Tamidis is tuna, and that was the original case which they asked the Rav to be done on.
The Rav being Rav is all electric.
I should hope that I was speaking to YU students when I say the Rav, that means something. If, listen, I'm a Chaim Berliner. If I walk into Chaim Berliner and say the Rav, I would have my head removed right square off my neck and put right on the table next door. Okay. So Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal was asked, what about tuna fish and the way that tuna is made? Tuna comes from the ocean, obviously. The ocean can have all kinds of God knows what floating around in it. In addition to that, there are multiple methods of removing the tuna from the water. Some methods will allow non-tunas to get caught in the process. Some methods will not. To the best of my knowledge, that was not included in the question that was asked to the Rav, but as far as we're concerned, it's of no consequence. Why? Because the tuna, unlike what you may have heard outside, is not processed on the boat. There is nothing done to the tuna on the boat, other than being stored in either a saltwater slush or a deep freezer, something else whole, brought to a factory, and in the factory, which is visited by a mashgiach, that's where the fish will be processed. So we regularly get questions from people who are not familiar with the Metzias. How does the OU certify tuna? Do you go out on the boat? The answer is we don't. Just like we don't go to the farm to watch them pull potatoes out of the ground, there's no reason for us to see what it looks like while it's still in its native environment. There's no cautious concern while it's still in its native environment. It's only once you start to process it where issues come up. When we certify potatoes, we certify the factory where they're cut up, not the dirt where they're grown. Same thing with the tuna. We don't certify the water where they're living or the boat that brought them to the factory so much as the factory that started doing the processing. We have mashgichim that visit the factories on a regular basis. And an additional note, at least to tempt those who would challenge that God only knows what's going into an OU tuna, there has never been a single instance in any major, significant, or otherwise, to best of my knowledge, even a non-significant, but I threw that in just for the heck of it, significant tuna manufacture that was caught with anything, v'loi-oid, nothing that was a treif of fish. Nothing that was even another kosher fish. V'loi-oid, that we never found another kosher non-tuna in the factory. We've never found in a tuna factory that they switched one species of kosher tuna for another. For example, those of you who are savvy consumers may have noticed that there's two prices on canned tuna. One is for light, and one is for white. Besides talking about solid versus chunk. White, by law, has to refer to albacore, the species of tuna known as albacore. Yes, that's white. Light tuna, by definition, can refer to all the other species of tuna, okay, which tend to be smaller, have a higher salt content, cheaper, relative to albacore, and less mercury for those of you who have ladies at home who might be expecting. You might want to tell them to stay away from albacore at least more than 2 cans a week, but that's nothing to do with kashkacha, that's just nitzatova. You're here anyways, might as well mention it, right?
Fair enough. Mercury?
Yeah, mercury PCBs, all those things get stored up in albacore. They're bigger, they're older, they live longer, they acquire more smaller fish which ate all this mishigas, so right. Okay, so what happened? We've never found a company, and we actually had a mashgiach try this once, who almost got himself kicked out of the building. Here's what he did. He took one line which was producing white tuna, and one line that was producing light tuna. Light meaning everything besides albacore. And while the people went on lunch break, this mashgiach decided he's going to see if the OU's mishigasin about they don't mix things up is really true. So he picked up a tuna from one species off of this line, moved it over to this line, dumped it on the table, and went back to lunch. The workers come back, and there's a major scandal going around the factory. There's the wrong species of tuna on the wrong table. They want names, they want addresses, there's digital pictures going all over the place, called to the quality control manager, who did what, what's going on, called the boat, till finally they got that the rabbi did it, they come out, threw him out of the building. That you know why? Why? Now he assured us beforehand that he was watching it the whole time, and that if they hadn't chapped it, he would have himself chapped it. Why? Because you can literally kill somebody by putting the wrong tuna in a can. And you'll tell me, Rabbi Goldberg, how dramatic of you, you could literally kill somebody. No, but you can, and I'll tell you why. Because retort technology, the technology that keeps tuna in a can from killing you when you open it up. Did you notice that when you open a can of tuna and leave it in the fridge, it doesn't last more than a week? But when you leave it sealed in a can, you can leave it in your closet for up to 4 years, according to industry standards. Why is that? Because the act of retorting it, sticking it in the steam oven, which cooks the tuna inside of the can, kills all the bacteria, reduces bacterial load. The retort directions, meaning the operator of the retort, has to have a major degree in engineering and know exactly what he's doing. Why? Because if he's off by a couple of degrees, a couple of pounds of pressure, or a couple of minutes on the retort cycle, they didn't necessarily kill all the bacteria inside of the can. The person who's going to open it up and eat it is going to be very, very sorry, but only for a few minutes, because then he'll be gone. Now, every species of tuna has a different retort time, retort length, retort pressure, whatever it is, relative to its species, meaning they do testing on everything exactly to fit this mold. If it's a little bit off, you killed everything. So don't let anyone talk to you about, the guy, you know what's going on in a tuna factory. I myself have been to Colombia to a tuna factory. I've been to Trinidad to tuna factories. I can tell you exactly what goes on over there. I have pictures. I'm an Eidacha that's still Nem Bisur, according to most people. And I can tell you that there's Nishdava Tzeredin. There's nothing trafe going on in your tuna factory. Yeah. So somebody said to me, what about if some guy opens up a tuna factory in his basement? Now your whole thing falls apart, because guy's in his own basement, he can do whatever he wants. Okay, that didn't happen, and obviously we're not talking about some yunuku who decided to figure out how to put tuna inside of a can and call it canned tuna. That's not what we're dealing with. The factories we're talking about are humongous operations. Some of them employ the entire island on which they're situated, and there was no concern about somebody trying to play some kind of a shtick. The tuna companies are very, very aware of what they're doing. Their quality standards are Abul Shamayim, and there's nothing to be concerned about a trace fish getting mixed up with a kosher one. Okay, I got 5 minutes left. Now we're done with tuna. Let's move on to salmon. The Orthodox Union will certify salmon whose skin is removed, even if there was no mashgiach visiting the factory of any system of hashgacha. Meaning, if you'll call the OU, which I dare you to do it, Rabbi Polsky will pick up the phone and say, hello, Orthodox Union, and then you say, I'd like to know, somebody claims, and I can't really prove it's true, but somebody claims that the OU holds that I could buy salmon with no skin from any store that I want, and it's not a problem. And he should hopefully tell you, yes, that's correct, so long as the knife and the board that were used to cut it up are clean, and there's no concern that it was dirty from a non-kosher species of fish, then the salmon itself does not require hashgacha. Why is that? So some very clever people say, what do you mean? It's a Beis Yosef. What's a Beis Yosef? The Shach in Pei Gimel Chav Zion quotes a Beis Yosef that says the following, that the red eggs, which we find without hashgacha. He's probably referring to salmon eggs. There's a few other fish that have red eggs. They're all kosher. So the Beis Yosef says, the Kadmonim have told us all red eggs are kosher, even without hashgacha. Now, that would seem to be fakir from the Gemara. At least the Gemara requires kirvei dogim to have a hashgacha on them. The person who takes them out of the fish has to say, ani malachtim, matzotim adaptar. Okay, there's all kinds of tanoim. Beis Yosef makes a statement, red-colored eggs, it's all kosher, nothing to worry about. The Pri Chodesh disagrees with him. The Archa Shulchan has some questions about it, but leave that as it may. So people say that's where the OU got it from because you made a Gedera Shelf a red. So that's red eggs, and we say the red eggs are all kosher. So you said red flesh is the same thing as red eggs. That's not where it comes from. It has nothing to do with each other. What we're talking about is that Rebelski has Masayra from Reb Moshe. He's not the only one. I heard it from other people too. And that was that the red color of salmon and other salmonoid fish, like char, like trout, have a simen muvuk, meaning that there's no fish that has a red flesh which could be substituted for a salmon, trout, arctic char, or anything else. You would not have a red-fleshed fish around anyways, so therefore there's no concern that they were switching one for another. They asked Rav Moshe, I wasn't there, but this is what I was told. They asked Rav Moshe, if we could tell you that all the fish that were going around the world with red flesh were kosher fish, would you still have a reason that you have to put a hashgacha on them? Would you still need to see the skin? Or could you say that that red color would be a simen muvuk, to which Rav Moshe is reported to have said that that is called a simen muvuk. There's nothing that you could switch it for that would not be kosher. Therefore, there's no chiyuv to find any simonim on it. For more information on this policy and the basis to it, and the potential kashas which you and other kashas organizations have thrown at the Orthodox Union, check out your folder, because I put a copy of the Hamodia article, which we wrote in 2006, explaining why we believe this to still be the case ad hayom hazeh. With the next 2 minutes, let's talk herring. I mentioned before, herring drops its scales when it comes out of the water. That's not a problem kashrus-wise, because any time a fish had scales any time during its life cycle, which herring do, that's a kosher fish. The question is, again, we don't have anyone who's standing at a herring factory, so how do we know that the company's only producing herring? Okay, there's some other non-kosher fish that swim with herring. For instance, whenever you put out herring at a kiddush, what happens? A bunch of people come over, stick their hand in and grab. Because when there's free herring, there's always someone who's interested. Don't think that's only true in your shul. That's also true in the ocean. And when there's a bunch of free herring swimming around, you will find sharks, skates, maybe some octopus, other whatever little sea creatures that say, hey, free herring, what's the problem? And they will go and they will chop it. Don't think the herring boats are smart enough to figure out how, when they're taking 100,000 herring at a shot, how to not chop the shark that was feasting on them before he was chopped. They don't. The way that we remove those sharks and other predators is by when they take the whole load into the factory. There are a few different systems that the plant has of sorting the fish. The one I like the best is the one they sort it by size. When they sort the fish by size, they put it through these giant rollers, and when the fish gets bigger, and the rollers are, I don't know, it's hard to describe, especially on tape, but where the fish go through the rollers, and depending on their size, they fall between the crack as the graduated size of the rollers grows bigger. That's true only till the maximum size of herring, the things that are bigger than a herring, for instance, even the smallest baby shark, which are huge relative to the size of the herring, that's why they're eating the herring, because they're much, much bigger than the herring, they fall off the end of the roller and land on the floor of the factory, and you can step all over them while you're walking through that area of the plant. So there's never been anybody who ever found, claiming it, not claiming it, quietly, privately, publicly, or anything in between, that somebody found a non-kosher fish mixed in with a herring, not a pickled herring, not a canned herring, not another herring. The factories are very careful about these things. That's why we don't have any concerns about them. Gentlemen, I thank you very much for your time. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Can we take some questions, please?
You get one because I got to go diving. Go.
Oh.
Yes.
So if you're able to rely on some reasonings to say for sure that all these things are kosher without the skin, so why...
Salmon.
Oh, yeah, salmon. And so why can't you rely on DNA?
That's a good question. If somebody would be able to figure out a way to prove it to us DNA-wise that they could know for a fact that this was a certain fish, it might be something to consider. It might be something to consider. But I think that the issue that Ramesh was dealing with as far as Simon Muvak on the salmon was concerned, if we're telling you need Simon, so Simon Muvak could qualify as Simon. DNA wouldn't qualify as a Simon per se. It might be a hechrach, it might be a hechra on what something is. But you couldn't say that it fits the exact same category as Simon. Simon is something about the fish which would identify it to the user. I don't know that DNA would...
On the fish, you
mean? I'm sorry?
You mean because it's in front of you on the fish, as you see it?
Right. So DNA might prove to me what it is. I'm not sure that you could rely on that. I hear what you're saying. I personally don't know that we would accept it, because it's one of those... the use of new technology is terrific, but when we start using it in our psakas, we get into trouble by everybody. So I doubt that anyone would rely on it lamaisa, but we have used it the other way. If we had a question about if something got messed up with a tray fish, we have sent things to labs to have them check it out to see if something got mixed in. I wouldn't give a hashgacha based on that, but in a case like this where we're talking about forcing a recall of a product, so we would potentially rely on a DNA testing to be machmir on us what happened. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Rabbi Goldberg.